Grant handed Lakesh a spare Sin Eater and a trio of 20-round magazines.
Use this to protect yourself and Manticore. I know it'll be hard with one hand, but it's big and heavy enough to control the recoil, and I've seen you shoot this much better than that midget 45 Domi gave you.
Thank you, friend Grant. I hope that it won't come to that.
He stuffed the extra magazines into his sling where he could reach them easily. By stuffing the barrel into his belt, he'd be able to secure the Sin Eater to reload it. Grant stalked off with a grace and stealth that belied his enormous size. The surviving Nephilim drone stood astride the corpse of his partner, his asp spearing yellow-white lightning at the attacking consortium gunman. The reek of roasted human flesh filled the corridor. Around creased the humanoid's reptilian head. Grant took that as his opportunity to even the odds. Copperhead in one fist, Sin Eater in the other, he poked out from behind a column and aimed both firearms. His powerful sinewy arms held the two weapons locked on target despite their effort to buck and recoil. Veins stood out under the skin-tight shadow suit, muscles rippling as he ripped the millennialists with both weapons. A dozen human soldiers had survived their ambush on the two Nephilim warriors. By the time Grant was gone, he'd reduced their numbers to 3, 9 corpses joining the 5 charred lumps of smoking flesh on the ground. It was a wave of slaughter, and the surprise Grant had sprung on them was ruthless. He wasn't proud of himself for gunning them down from behind. The 3 survivors broke and ran for their lives, lobbing a grenade toward Grant. The big man leaped, but an asp bolt lanced into the explosive canister. Grant scurried to his knees and looked at the Nephilim as it staggered against a wall, clutching its bleeding head, too dazed to be a threat. Grant wondered if the drone's self-preservation initiative had been inadvertently responsible for his rescue. Maybe the head blow had shaken the humanoid's brain enough to give it a sense of gratitude for Grant saving its life. Ultimately, Grant didn't care about the whys, just that for a moment the creature had reacted with life-saving mercy rather than as a mindless killing machine. The wounded reptilian warrior staggered away, blood pouring into its eyes. Grant took a moment to reload his weapons, then glanced at Lakesh, who was still dutifully guarding Manticore. Grant keyed his contact.
Better pull back a little bit out of sight, Lakesh.
Manticore is out of the line of fire, but from this vantage point I observe some activity farther down the corridor.
Grant got to a corner across from Lakesh and peered around it. Sure enough, the 3 consortium mercenaries had retreated and met up with another platoon of gunmen. A quick count put at least 20 downrange. Grant positioned his Sin Eater in its forearm holster, freeing his hand to root through his war bag for a pair of grenades that he hooked onto his belt.
Lakesh, draw their attention down the hallway. Just a few shots. Don't stand and fight. I need to get close enough to drop these in their blind spot.
Absolutely, friend Grant.
The scientist was still rubbery on his feet, but he soldiered on, despite his wounds and exhaustion. Grant slipped along the wall, keeping to the shadows, grenade in one hand, thumb through its cotterpin ring, Copperhead locked in his other hand. He paused, seeing a massive form with a blunt, close-shaved head. Grant recognized the man as one of the Cobaltville magistrates, Christian. The bulky man was not much more than a thug who got off on bullying others. With the implode grenade, Grant would remove another overtrained hired gun from the planet. Grant froze, looking back. There were more armored figures, one an Asian human wearing smart metal and another Nephilim. The two spotted the consortium platoon down the hall. Grant recognized the human as the ranting maniac who had claimed he had been the mastermind of the millennialists' attack on the Naga catacombs.
Christian! You ignorant, dumb-obsessed thug!
Grant grimaced. Even though he was in the shadows and out of sight, he was caught in the crossfire. Consortium gunmen and asp-armed servants of Enlil opened fire, their weapons filling the air inches in front of Grant with sheets of flying death. Lakesh realized that his ally was in trouble. He grimaced, the borrowed Sin Eater perched in his hand.
Friend Grant, are you hit?
Give these fuckers a few moments. I'm pinned down, left and right. If you can, work back around to pick up Manticore.
You're surrounded.
Just protect Manticore. If I can get out...
Lakesh saw that the consortium gunmen were focused on the direction that vomited lances of energy toward them. He gritted his teeth, then thumbed the Sin Eater selector to full auto.
I'll cut you an escape route.
Lakesh!
The scientist swung around the corner, bracing his arm on a wall, tilting the machine pistol so that if it rose, the stone against his forearm would keep the weapon locked on target. Brass flew from its breech as heavyweight slugs poured toward the backs of the consortium gunmen. Surprised mercenaries were torn from the wall into the line of fire of the asp bolts. One craned his neck to see where the gunfire came from. Lakesh aimed again. Consortium killers scrambled, moving to where they would be protected from both the Nephilim intruders and Lakesh's fire. With a surge of speed, Grant burst into the open, copperhead in hand. Consortium gunmen recoiled, taking cover from the big ex-magistrate's assault. The hallway that Grant had just exited vomited a cloud of smoke, indicative of a grenade's detonation. Covered from behind by the rolling mini-bomb, Grant had enough breathing room to race toward Lakesh. The scientist tucked the hot barrel into his belt and fed it a fresh magazine. By the time Grant reached him, Lakesh had finished reloading. Grant skidded to a halt, hurling himself behind a corner. Lakesh ducked behind cover, then looked at Grant.
That was the stupidest thing you've ever done.
You're telling me?
Stick with us, man. You're learning well.
It was viscerally satisfying.
Thanks.
Grant took the second grenade off his belt.
Got a few more distraction shots in you?
2 mags left.
That's my boy. Fire at will.
Lakesh swung around, back toward the encamped consortium gunmen. Christian's force returned fire, their shadowy corridor lit as if by lightning. Grant whipped the grenade around the corner, his brawny arm launching the miniature bomb with such force it seemed to be rocket-powered. Lakesh slid down the wall, shaking from adrenaline overload.
Not bad for a 250-year-old white coat, Lakesh.
I'm only 250. Right now I feel 500.
Come on, we gotta get back to Manicor.
Yes, time enough for sleep when I'm dead.
Putting one leaden foot in front of the other, Lakesh followed Grant down the hall to get back to Manticore. The big Cerberus warrior held Lakesh back, then took cover.
Grant! You accused me of having delusions of adequacy. Now we're going to see who the real failure is.
Bridget and Kane looked at the last of the latches. None of the combinations that the former archivist's eidetic memory told her was right felt good to Kane, and he kept her from completing the handle sequence.
This is exactly as the pictograms were carved. There's no other way it makes sense, unless...
The flame-haired woman looked up at Hannah.
Hannah, does this make sense? I'm just going through the images, not the actual context.
No, the syntax is all wrong. Let me get a look at all of the options.
The Naga Princess twisted the puzzle box handle around, looking at the symbols.
What in the hell?
Nothing seems right.
Completely confusing. According to this, the saying that Bridget has put together is... And he did so love his children that he entrusted them his secrets. But the only viable option that fits into the sentence structure reads, cut them off from his secrets.
Which comes out completely wrong in terms of the translations you've put all over your city. But it does make sense thematically and in the context of the security mechanism.
He kept his secrets away from the Naga to protect them from others who'd want to get in here. If the Naga had control of the nanites, they'd have immortality, complete recovery from all but the most heinous injuries.
And the ability to infuse our bodies with power like you wouldn't imagine.
Domi backed to the edge of the pit.
Loudspeaker, we're still alone in here.
Reflex urged Kane to grab Domi around the waist and yank her into the hole. As he collapsed to the bottom, Bridget and Hannah followed suit. Kane felt the rush of air as a propelled steel door flew by, its bottom edge missing his spine by mere millimeters. Kane looked over the lip of the pit, the smoke swirling and clearing back out into the hall. As the mist dissipated, he could see Durga and Fargo standing side by side, flanked by dozens of serpent men.
Knock, knock!
Kane's Sin Eater was out, aimed over the edge of the pit. He stayed low, but none of Durga's followers had entered.
I see you finally picked a side that you think can win, Fargo. But from where I sit, the two of you will end up with a couple more holes in you before this minute is through.
You wouldn't want to do that, Kane. Sure, shooting us might help you, but if Durga tosses his grenade in there with you, well, we're not exactly sure just how many Naga in this city will be killed.
Kane glanced down at Bridget. She nodded in confirmation.
Depending on Enki's proficiency with nanites, improperly opening this hatch could unleash a plague of eaters that could devour every living organism for hundreds of square miles.
The grenade wouldn't affect them?
They're too small. Overpressure wouldn't disturb their mechanisms. The force of the detonation would only increase their dispersion. The only thing that might stop them is an implode grenade. But even then, the fire blast wouldn't get through the hatch. Only the concussion wave created by the atmosphere rushing back into the void created would break the hatch. Then the nanomachines would come out.
Be reasonable, Kane. I'm not going to have your people tortured or killed. I'll actually be able to arrange for some clemency for you.
Sorry, Durga. I was born at night, but not last night. Especially with your bit back in the hangar, planting the seed in others that I might be jealous of you.
That was before all my plans got pushed forward. But yes, I would have had one of my untransformed boys take a potshot at me with an old Sin Eater. Really too bad we didn't get that far, isn't it?
Durga drew his sidearm from his hip holster. Kane recognized it as a Sin Eater.
This is the weapon I killed my driver with after I gunned down Garuda. This way, poor little lost Durga was the sole survivor of the group that the king led. So many lost.
Yeah, we get the point. You shot Daddy. Your mommy got sprayed all over a wall. And to pay back the world for not understanding your dreams...
Talk about my mother some more, please.
Touchy, touchy. You can kill her, or rather have her killed. Shoot me. Maybe I won't pull the trigger and kill you and your boys.
Risking thousands of lives? Interesting bluff.
Die quick or die slow under your rule? I'd go for quick.
So, we're both threatening each other with the same oblivion.
You really aren't giving me many options. I shoot you, you end up killing everyone in the city. You shoot me, you kill yourself. I'm counting on your will to live winning out here.
Well played.
Durga clipped the grenade to his belt. Kane motioned for the three women to get out of the pit with him. Brigid, Domi, and Hana took cover behind the wreckage of the steel door. Kane sat on the edge of the pit, gun still aimed at the lock.
We're in an impasse now, because there's no way in hell that I'm going to let you get through this hatch.
And there's no way I'm going to surrender the power of the Anunnaki to an ape like you. So we'll have to think of something.
I'm all for anything involving you fucking off, eating shit, and dying, in no particular order. Throw me your compromise on that.
Fargo and the prince's minions swarmed into the chamber. Out of his peripheral vision, Kane could see that his three companions were behind solid cover and their weapons were ready. Secured behind steel, copper, and stone, Durga's Cobra warriors would have the toughest time getting through to the women. Durga stood across from Kane in the depression the gold-colored tub used to inhabit. He looked down at the hatch.
So close, yet so far. What's your suggestion, Prince?
I am now the king.
That would require the emergency council's approval, Durga. And a good number of them are dead thanks to your cultists.
You've got courage, Hana. Show some brains, too, and you can survive this.
I thought I'd lost my mind when Manticore was shot.
The two of us, strong-willed, brave, brilliant, we could mold this city. If you don't want me for a lover, fine. I'll grow Manticore some brand new legs.
Kane's eyes flickered until he caught a glimpse of Hana in his peripheral vision. It was a tempting offer, and he didn't relish catching a bullet in the back of his head.
Kane, we got some serious shit going on.
Kane kept his jaw locked, keeping Durga ignorant of his contact with Grant.
Huh.
Can't talk? Well, this is just informative right now. Looks as if Enlil's been recruiting and he's got one of the consortium commanders on his side. Luckily, with all the panic, people have hidden in their quarters because this just turned into a three-way dance.
Four.
Fargo pointed casually to Kane.
Sounds like there's more trouble afoot, Durga. What's Grant telling you, Kane?
Enlil and the consortium just stopped by for a cup of sugar. Didn't Enlil tell us he wasn't within 1,000 miles of here?
I wouldn't trust that skilly bastard farther than I could spit.
The hairs on the back of Kane's neck rose, and the Cerberus leader lunged aside. Two streams of poison jetted from Durga's fangs, catching Kane in his left eye. The normally sure-footed fighting man tripped and stumbled. The entire left side of Kane's face felt as if it had been struck by a spiked maul, and he could feel the skin around the eye go numb instantly. Kane's tear ducts kicked into overdrive, trying to flush the foul irritant from his agonized tissues. Had Kane been hit head-on, he would have been blinded. As it was, the pain was a distraction, allowing the renegade Cobra Prince to swing the frame of his sin eater across Kane's jaw. The blow made Kane reel back against the side of the pit. Durga lunged in quickly, wrenching Kane's gun hand wrist across his knee. Durga's intent was to take the Cerberus warrior as a hostage. Kane could pinpoint Domi and Bridget by the sounds of their handguns amid the din of Durga's allies. One bullet nicked Durga's hood.
Idiots!
Durga spun away from Kane, clutching the perforated sheet of muscle between his head and shoulder.
Pull back! They're dug in too well!
Kane took advantage of Durga's momentary distraction and skidded to the floor, his legs scissoring between the snake man's. Lower extremities suddenly seized, Durga found himself off balance. Kane knew that Durga had enough information to open the hatch to Enki's control chamber. With a lunge, he dived into Durga's back. The hard-knuckled punch into Durga's kidney would have paralyzed a normal man, but the tough scales of Durga's hide blunted the force of Kane's strike. For his trouble, the ex-magistrate caught an elbow in the mouth. Blood sprayed from the impact, and Durga twisted, reaching for the human's throat. Kane figured two could play at the spraying game. He blew a crimson cloud of mixed spit and blood into Durga's eyes. The Cobra Man blinked, trying to wipe the bloody saliva off his face. Kane brought the hard edge of his hand down on Durga's clavicle. But a leather coil suddenly snaked around Kane's throat like a noose.
Stop shooting or I'll break Kane's neck!
Durga squirmed out from under Kane. He lunged, sinking his fangs into Kane's neck above the collar of the shadow suit.
Kane!
As long as Kane was between Bridget and Durga, Bridget couldn't put a bullet into his skull.
Bitch! Durga, what the hell are you doing? You killed him!
If agony and the leather of Fargo's whip hadn't combined to constrict Kane's throat, the ex-magistrate would have disagreed. Certainly, the venom seared through Kane's neck muscles, but fortunately, Durga hadn't struck a major blood vessel.
Hurts like hell, doesn't it, Kane? Fuck off!
He won't die from the bite. A Naga's venom is dilute after a spray.
Throw down your guns or I pull Pretty Boy's head off!
Kane's left arm lay limply at his side, but he had enough strength to grasp the cord of Fargo's whip. He couldn't pull any slack around his throat, but at least the threat of a broken neck would be averted, should the archaeologist yank on the whip again. Kane could only blink his right eye, the left one swollen almost shut from its exposure to Durga's venom. At least that side of the face had gone numb, something he was thankful for. Of course, it was a small favor.
Good, Bridget. What about you, Domi?
Kane grimaced. Bridget had surrendered her weapon, which meant that the others were that much closer to being killed. Disarmed, there'd be nothing holding back Durga's warriors.
Baptiste, pick up your gun!
I'm not going to risk your life, Kane! Durga, you want the hatch opened, you tell your new toady to let him go!
I already know the code. I was listening at the door.
Get ready, Kane.
Kane craned his neck, trying to see Bridget, but as she was approaching around his left side, he was practically blind. Instead, he listened for her cue through his contact. Kane clenched Fargo's whip tightly, then folded his legs, getting all the traction he could against the side of the depression in the floor. Fargo tried to snap Kane's neck by jerking on his end of the whip, but once Kane extended his legs, the archaeologist tumbled to the ground. Durga fared no better, as Kane's body rammed into his chest like a charging bull. The Cerberus warriors had regained their advantage. It would be a handful of seconds before Durga's soldiers recovered from the stun grenade. But once they could see straight, the chamber of the Cobra Baths would fill with the rattle of automatic weapons once again. Devin Lan loved wielding the power of the Asp Blaster on his forearm. He felt like a god, able to summon lightning with just a gesture. The smart metal armor had saved him from serious injury, glancing bullets leaving only discolored smears where they had been deflected by the Anunnaki alloy. The enhancing effects of Enlil's gift to him felt like a drug. He stalked closer to where Grant and Lakesh had taken cover. Simply by holding his forearm in front of his face, Lan was able to protect his head from the Cerberus interlopers' gunfire. Each time they took a shot at him, it was wasted ammunition.
Now you see the power of a man with a vision. Enlil has granted me a portion of his godlike power. I can create, and I can destroy.
You can also bore the fuck out of us with your stupid chatter.
Your self-aggrandizement speaks to serious psychological issues. Perhaps if you sublimated your belligerence, people would respect your contributions more.
Belligerent? I am right. I don't have to be nice. I'm sick of idiots walking around and going, to valid criticisms of their stupidity.
Correctness is no substitute for courtesy.
Shut up! That's what they said, too. The whole world is afraid of someone with an opinion. They try to snuff you out, silence you. See, Enlil, I've orchestrated the destruction of two of your greatest enemies. They can't hurt me!
Lakish wasn't in the best of moods, especially since a tendril of an asp bolt that penetrated a section of wall near his thigh had charred his pant leg slightly. Still, the scientist was riding an adrenaline rush again, so his pain dissipated. Grant winked at him, and he nodded in response. Both men understood that it was vital to get Lan as far from Manticore as possible, so when they gunned down the armored man, they wouldn't hurt their crippled ally. As Lan gained confidence in his own invulnerability, he advanced down the hallway toward them. Grant flicked his Sin Eater to full auto, then held out his fingers, counting down to their combined attack. Lan paused in the hallway. Was the loudmouthed fool actually aware that he was walking into a trap? Grant took a quick look just as Lan collapsed. There was a gory wound in the back of his skull. Glancing up, Grant saw Manticore lying on his belly, a smoking pistol in his grasp. Grant motioned for Lakish to follow him, and the two men rushed to their friend.
We almost had him.
I'm not feeling doped on morphine anymore. Besides, that little rat was getting on my nerves.
Grant scooped up Manticore.
Good enough reason. Feel like you have your groove back?
I'd rather have my feet in some aspirin, but I can manage.
Bastards!
Grant and Manticore looked to see Christian, a bloody mess from the grenade, limping into the open, trying to level a shaky gun at them. The blast had ruined the big millennialist's coordination, but at this range and on full auto, the Sin Eater would rip the two apart. Lakish stepped from behind Grant.
Grant, you left your hands full when there are still consortium malcontents about.
So?
He had you for backup.
Thank you, gentlemen. It won't make up for the Queen's demise.
But at least you feel useful again.
Hana and the others, how are they doing?
They're behind cover, and Durga bit Kane.
Then leave us two useful bastards behind and go help them. We can hold the fort.
Grant laid Manticore against a wall, retrieved his war bag, and took off to catch up with Kane. He hoped it wasn't too late for the rest of his compatriots. Enlil walked through the hangar. All but one of his Nephilim warriors were gone now, their bullet-torn bodies strewed about the entrance to the Naga's underground city. The Overlord looked around in disgust, trying to block out the reek of cooked flesh. Disdainfully, he kicked aside one blackened corpse. His Nephilim minion followed, as silent as always, awaiting the Anunnaki god's command.
Return to our skimmer and pilot it back home.
The Nephilim nodded, absently brushing its bloodied forehead. The dazed and crimson-streaked minion turned and leapt through the hangar doors. Enlil sensed something was different about the creature who'd just walked away, but dismissed the anomaly as related to its minor head injury. Once the Nephilim healed, all would be well again. Enlil looked at the skimmer he had given to Durga. False scarring marred its perfect skin, and the Overlord could see where a curious examiner had chipped off the charred, bubbled hide, exposing the perfect seamless metal beneath.
A waste of energy. Knowing Kane, he'll cause irreparable damage to the Cobra Paths.
He rubbed the skimmer's hull, feeling its warm, living metal beneath his fingers. Enlil considered Durga. Though the Overlord would be denied the treasure of Enki's genetic manipulation, so too would the Naga Prince. Given the carnage and destruction in the hangar, both the Consortium and the Cobra folk had lost significant resources. The Millennialists had wasted manpower and good faith in the Kashmir region, and the war between the Nephilim and the human soldiers had destroyed a dozen helicopters. Enlil had sacrificed a mere 7 Nephilim and a smart armor module. He smiled. It was a fair trade. He climbed aboard the scar-covered skimmer, then slid into its pilot chair. He rested his hands on the controls and willed the craft to rise. It responded to its master instantly, with the certainty and grace of a dancer. The silver craft exited through the hangar doors, picking up enough velocity to escape Earth's pull. The Kashmir faded into the distance behind him, a failed plot, but still one that provided the Anunnaki with some small victories. Whether Cain or Durga survived to see the sun was no matter. The winner of this conflict was a mere mortal. Their time would end soon enough. Hana withdrew the syringe, and Cain started to regain feeling in his left arm. He looked at her, feeling the anti-venin course through his veins.
Why do you have a needle full of anti-venin?
In case that bastard Durga ever beat Manticore, I wanted to be able to save his life.
So Durga's venom wasn't diluted?
I was trying to keep you from panicking. Though honestly, the survival rate of humans against our natural poison is 90%. However, we need you at full strength, or as close to it as we can get.
Aren't Naga immune to their own species' venom?
Manticore is a second-generation descendant of a human. Durga and I are natural Naga, or at least our bloodline goes back to Enki's original manipulation of our ancestors' genes. Royal bloodline venom is slightly different, requiring a different anti-venin.
Cain flexed his arm. He could feel the swelling start to fade over his left eye, but he was still half-blind. He crawled over, looking at whom Domi was targeting. Durga's soldiers had advanced into the chamber with steel plates and used them to create a barricade between the Cerberus rebel's position and the pit.
Ugh.
They kept their legs covered on the advance. I couldn't take them down.
Cain patted Domi on the shoulder, then crawled back to the others.
Durga and Fargo have impeded access to the control room.
Provided there aren't any further security measures barring the way.
Either way, the Naga have a moving barricade and could flank this little foxhole we found ourselves in. Any suggestions?
Yeah, try not to get bit by the 6-foot-tall snake man next time.
How about you bite me, Grant? Where the hell are you?
I'm down the hall from the Cobra Baths. Looks like a busy day there.
Oh, it's all manner of fun here. We're pinned down by at least 15 snake men. Got something to help out?
My war bag. But I don't want to use up my grenades in case Enlil makes another move.
That's not going to happen, Grant. Bri spotted a skimmer taking off from the hangar.
Shit. And I like that ship. She handled smoother than glass.
Get us out of here, and I'll go punch Enlil on the kidneys for you.
Friend Cain, you sound in poor health.
Durga gave him a love bite, Lakesh.
The more you two joke, the closer Durga gets to whatever powerhouse technology was left behind by Enki.
A mortally wounded serpent held the trigger down on his assault rifle, bullets spraying the twisted steel wreckage that the Cerberus contingent and Hana had hidden behind. A second gun-wielding snake man whirled, aiming his weapon toward his dying comrade in hopes of ending the wild storm of deadly bullets. His burst had cored the Naga, but Cain aimed his copperhead toward the armed Durga minion. Grant made his way through the doorway, taking care of the last of the resistance in the wake of his grenade attack. Cain lurched from his hiding spot, looking around at the scattered bodies of the snake men. Some were alive, but their injuries would keep them from engaging in further hostility. One Naga reached up, clutching at Cain's leg, eyes soft as he clasped his other hand over a wound in his upper chest.
Mercy.
Cain spun, but Hana had shifted her aim toward another wounded serpent man. Cain looked down at the pitiful wounded creature who had begged him for mercy.
Stop it!
They are followers of a maniac. Killers who found justification in Durga's war for supremacy. You'd show them compassion?
They're wounded. No longer threats.
They'd bide their time and come back. Worse than ever.
He didn't have a weapon, Hana.
Hana opened her mouth, her dripping fangs folding down.
No Naga is ever unarmed!
It would be worthless to continue this debate while the menace of Durga and Fargo still threatened. He turned his attention away from the ruthless princess. Cain looked at the hole the hatch pulled open. There was a ladder made of D-shaped iron rungs leading into the depths, an unholy red glow emanating from below. Stepping closer, he could see three pulsing, glowing lines etched into the wall.
What the hell is that?
Grant approached the group as Bridget knelt and touched the illuminating strip carved parallel to the ladder. The air above it was warm, but when she pressed the line, it was icy cold, a chill crawling up her finger as heat seemingly leached from the contact. The material was solid, and where Bridget had touched it had suddenly become brighter.
I'd say it was bioluminescent, but this is some form of metal. We know that the Tuatha De Danann were aware of deposits of auric calcum, and that the Anunnaki were able to create alloys of the metal for other purposes.
An energized, never-dimming light source. Just enough chemical reaction in a metal to keep it lit for, what, thousands of years?
Activated by ambient heat, most likely. It absorbed thermal energy from my touch.
Frowning, Kane crawled onto the ladder and began his trek into the depths of the city.
Something's going on.
Kane, we're starting to pick up severe electronic interference. Bri pinpointed a massive energy...
Kane deactivated the contact, then bent to retrieve the Sin-Eater that Durga had taken from him.
We're on our own, gang. Durga turned something on down there.
That pretty much screws our day.
Taking her contact from behind her ear and pocketing it, Domi followed Kane into the ladder pit. The Cerberus exiles were no strangers to entering the dark underside of a hidden culture. That there was a mad being with aspirations to godhood present was not new to them either. However, the lack of novelty about the threat they faced was no comfort. They were going to face a battle for their lives as well as for those of the thousands in the Naga City. Fargo looked askance toward Durga as his fingers ran over the glassy smooth console jutting from the wall. A monitor above the console flashed with golden symbols, pictograms blinking into existence as he operated the interface. The chamber they were in was lit by the metallic indentations along the domed high ceiling. The console was one of many dotting the circular wall, but it was the only one with a glassy smooth surface. The rest had conventional tile keyboards and more conventional-looking monitors. Eight hallways entered into the junction, including the one they had just passed through. Fargo was dismayed at the lack of tanks similar to the ones above.
We shouldn't have unplugged the pumps. I mean, you are talking to the nanites, right?
I am. And they are speaking back to me.
In English? Because all I'm seeing is chicken scratches on that monitor.
Durga frowned, then stepped over, grabbing Fargo's wrist. He pressed the human's hand against the glassy console. Fargo felt a surge of electricity pour up his arm, wrapping around his heart. He wanted to pull away for a moment, grimacing against the prickling that stabbed at his chest. The initial pain suddenly faded, dissolving to a subtle warmth that made him feel as if he were floating in a placid, sun-drenched pool.
You tell me what language they are speaking to you, Fargo.
I don't understand it. Let go.
Wait. Wait for them to coordinate. It will take a few moments.
Austin Fargo, we welcome you to the interface.
Who are you?
We are the interface. What is your request?
What are my options?
Images began flashing on his retinas. He saw dozens of iterations of himself, each of some different form, but hewn from different substances. Some looked like crystalline glass, others looked like carved marble, while yet others had animal-like hides, visions of himself as a Naga or with the heavy armor of a rhinoceros. Other images showed on his mind's eye, views of the world through various spectrums. The strangest images were flame and electricity cast in his shape.
Oh, pick one and never be normal again?
His hand radiated intense heat, and Fargo's options screen vanished, leaving him looking at his hand, engulfed in flickering orange plasma.
This transformation lasts as long as you wish, and can be altered at any time. We are the interface to the nanomachines that entered your body when you touched the True Pool.
The True Pool?
Again an image flashed in his mind's eye. It was an Anunnaki lord standing at the console and operating it. The being turned and looked Fargo in the eye.
The True Pool. The nanomachines that have been mentioned of late are secondary constructs, developed by Enlil, or degraded from constant use across four centuries.
Degraded? They've settled into one particular program. The creation of Enki's Naga.
Exactly. The True Pool, left inert for millennia, has far greater capability due to the fact that it has not had the same data burned into its operating system.
If Enki had this power, how come he didn't defeat Enlil?
The changes do not allow for unlimited power, just unlimited opportunity to adapt. As well, the creator Enki knew there was cause for restraint, even of the greatest of powers. He was not like Enlil, who would burn the heavens with the guns of Tiamat.
The power to be invincible. To think I was working with so pedestrian a concept.
Tiamat was your original goal, reached by use of the captured skimmer.
Toys compared to the brilliance of Enki.
Brilliance? Being able to mimic the periodic table of elements or see in spectra beyond normal vision? Oh, I'm sure it's great, but simple parlor tricks aren't going to change the world.
Durga stepped away from him.
Your lack of imagination disappoints me. I am now immortal. Who can stop me now? Oh!
Durga clutched his chest. Thick crimson trailed down his lips, soaking his pants, creating a circle of red around the kneeling figure. Fargo's eyes widened in surprise.
Damn. A man with a gun can trump a lot of things, including a magic act. I've seen it before. I hate to say it, but I told you so.
Durga's pained face looked toward Kane as he stepped into the open, his sin-eater smoking.
You!
Give up now and we'll do our best to stabilize you. Just surrender.
Durga's eyes glared angrily at the Cerberus warrior as Domi, Brigid, Grant, and Hannah followed him into the interface control room.
I'll die before I kneel to...
You're already kneeling. Fargo, whatever you've taken, you'd best put it back.
I don't know. Let me ask.
The archaeologist felt separated from reality again, faced with the image of the Anunnaki Enki standing before him.
The interface and the nanomachines may be expelled from your body with a simple wish. All you need do is ask.
Then I ask. I only wish that I had the knowledge that I had been searching for all my life.
You asked, and the interface shall honor your wishes, but not in the order you requested.
Fargo reached out to the console, his arm rising unbidden. A jolt ran down the length of Fargo's arm, the warmth that filled him before cooling, fading.
Goodbye, Austin Fargo. Relish the gift we have left you.
Fargo's arm dropped against his side, numbed.
The gift has been returned.
Gift?
Kane waved Fargo away from the console with the sin-eater. Brigid looked at the smooth, glassy surface. She moved closer to it.
No!
Why?
Bad feeling about it.
It's not a gift that is meant to be used by humankind. Not yet. Enki intended it for the world when it was needed most.
Brigid looked down at the mirrored console.
Wouldn't now be that time, with the planet filled with patches of radioactive wasteland and technology as sparse as desert scrub? I think this is when the world needs it most.
I can't believe what I'm seeing now.
Seeing? I thought you gave those things back.
Please, just believe me. There are travails that you cannot imagine.
We can imagine a hell of a lot.
Hannah towed Durga's shoulder.
Good riddance.
Hannah!
This sick cretin was a rapist and a murderer. His prospective brides before me either died or retired into obscurity to escape spending their lives with him.
So you stuck around for it?
Manticore was the leash he had around my neck. You know, as a highest-ranking, living member of the royal family, I could make certain that you will not be welcome here in our lands ever again.
Kane looked down at Durga, who lay still on the ground. Something was different, and it was more than just the dullness that came with death. It sounded a mental alarm that he tried to interpret as he examined the corpse.
Hannah, what makes you think that we would want an ally who'd relish the suffering of an enemy?
Hannah strode up to Kane until they were face to face. The Naga Regent was an undeniably beautiful creature, but anger had twisted her expression.
You're welcome to leave.
That's when the anomaly of Durga's death mask struck. The prince had died with his eyes open, but they were both clear. The baleful red lamp that blazed in a rage from his right eye socket had been doused, returning to a normal golden iris on a white sclera. Kane grabbed Hanna by the shoulders, dragging her away from Durga's body.
Everybody, get the hell out of here!
Suddenly, a thick, muscular trunk lashed up from the floor, the hard, sharp scales swinging toward Kane and Hanna. Durga's body began to grow, its serpentine features becoming more exaggerated.
Holy shit!
The shape that rose from the floor was huge, and the scales appeared to be made out of steel plate rather than standard keratin.
No. Not yet!
The monstrous coil of Durga's lower body writhed beneath him.
But maybe after I devour you and your companions, Grant, I'll turn all of you into my first shit as a god!
Kane lurched onto his knees. Between recovering from the anaphylactic shock of Durga's venom and the whiplash that would have broken his collarbone if it hadn't been for the protective nature of his shadow suit, he could barely stand up. A long, powerful arm reached out, fingers wrapping around Grant's torso. Domi leaped on Durga's arm, holding her .45 at contact range into the crook of the monster cobra's elbow. Involuntary reflex bent the arm, surprised and numbed fingers releasing Grant. A backhand brushed the side of Domi's head. It was only a grazing blow. Domi's lightning quickness prevented the massive abomination's hand from crushing her skull or breaking her neck. Hanna dragged Kane to his feet, then pulled him into a side tunnel.
Move it, Kane!
I'm not abandoning my friends.
With a twist, he pulled free from Hanna, Sin Eater snapping into his hand. Maybe Durga's hide was invulnerable to small caliber bullets, but the machine pistol fired rounds that could penetrate the hull of an assault helicopter. Whether it worked or not, it would buy his allies time to escape. Aiming, Kane charged at the enormous snake beast. Austin Fargo saw Durga twitch, then turned and ran. He had seen the interface's options, and there was nothing like that. But then Fargo hadn't remained in contact with the interface that long. There was also the possibility that Durga's blood, flooded with nanites, had permeated the uneven floor of the command chamber. Suddenly infused with the large area of stone and metal in the floor, the nanomachines could have added a couple of hundred pounds to Durga's mass. How Durga could have survived was answered by the little knot of knowledge that weighed behind his eyes like a 20-pound metal barbell.
The nanomachines obviated the necessity for blood. The true pool became infused with his body, providing his central nervous system with the nutrients and oxygen it required. This allowed his blood to soak into the earth beneath our feet.
I thought you'd left me.
Fargo didn't recognize this particular tunnel and realized that he'd retreated down the wrong bolt hole. He looked back. He was not returning to the hub to find the right direction.
Stay on this path, Fargo. You said that you wanted the knowledge that would guide you to the secrets lost by humankind. As such, I was constructed between your frontal lobes. I am your advisor and your resource.
How big is he now?
Extrapolating the amount of soil and loose stone his blood contacted, it's possible that Durga quadrupled his mass, 800 pounds.
What could stop him?
Knowledge, Alston Fargo.
Which is why I'm asking you.
You wanted knowledge to guide you. I simply cannot hand you an answer. When you made your request, you wanted to still be able to have your adventure.
I wish I had one of my improvised. Oh, fuck no. The bombs I planted.
It has more to do with their placement.
I'm not fast or strong enough to bait Durga into a trap.
There was some form of cross tunnel. The archaeologist pulled his revolver, but held his fire as Hanna rushed into view. She froze, pistol locked in her fist.
I see you took discretion as the better part of valor.
We don't have time for that now. I left a bomb underneath the statue of Garuda. It's set so that when it detonates, it will send a sheet of ignited natural gas throughout the central mall.
Saboteur!
There's no time. We have to lure Durga out of here and into proximity of that bomb.
Fargo and Hanna looked toward the central hub.
The four of them have communicators, but there's too much interference to get through to them. Even if we had a radio that operated on their frequency.
Fargo seemed to fade out for a moment. Then he looked her in the eye.
I figured out their frequency. Come on, we need to get to a radio.
Hanna looked back toward where the Cerberus warriors engaged in conflict with the newly serpentine horror that used to be Durga. Fargo grabbed her hand as they ran into a cross tunnel, winding their way back toward the Cobra Baths. Durga was reeling from the detonation of a grenade that had been thrown literally in his face. His vision was blurred, and he balanced unsteadily on the thick Atroxian body that had grown out of his lower torso. He lashed about with his long, powerful tail.
Mammals! It is time to join the dinosaurs!
I visit them every weekend, asshole.
Durga shot out a long arm to snatch up the Black Outlander. Rather than grabbing a torso, however, Durga jammed his fingers painfully into the wall.
Kane.
With a lurch, Durga drove his head and shoulders into the domed ceiling, the muscular length of his serpentine lower quarters rocketing him up with enough force to pry his stuck fist out of the wall and to smash the stone above.
Accursed chattering monkeys!
He drew back into himself, bringing up the interface in his mind's eye. There was a quick scan of the options open to him. Returning to reality, the nanomachines had repaired the damage done to his optic nerve by the explosion of the grenade in his face. Durga's headache was fading rapidly as the miniature builders shut down pain receptacles and shored up the damage to his body. The control room had emptied, however.
I have a new toy, and there's no one to share it with!
A quick visit to his interface, and Durga activated the ability to divine the infrared portion of the spectrum. Amid the still-hot brass ejected by the guns of the Outlanders, there were footprints that had scattered down four separate tunnels. Durga managed to differentiate the different tracks by the size of their feet. Picking Kane as his primary target, he swung his head into a tunnel, then extended his fangs. This time, instead of venom, fire issued on the spit of the Cobra Godling, a stream of blazing flame that curled through the air, illuminating Kane's retreat. With a lurch, Durga forced himself into the confines of the corridor, slithering after Kane. Kane looked over his shoulder. Durga was following him, which would give his allies time to regroup. Apparently, in his attempts to smash the companions into a bloody pulp, the Cobra Prince had destroyed whatever machinery had been jamming their contacts.
Kane! Kane! Can you read me?
Nah, you're a closed book to me, old man. Can we chat later? I'm being chased by a fire-breathing 20-foot-long snake centaur, whatever the fuck they call those creatures.
Good lord. Was that a creation of Enki's you uncovered?
No. It's Durga, after he infused a shitload of nanites into his bloodstream.
Kane swerved as he rounded a corner into a cross tunnel, dropping an implode grenade behind him and accelerated to the next crossway. The tunnel behind the Cerberus Exile lit up as Durga breathed fire once more. Kane tossed an implode grenade at Durga and dived for cover, somersaulting through the next intersection. Kane glanced back and saw that the mutated Naga slumped onto his forearms. Scales cracked and flaked off, exposing raw flesh underneath, but Durga still struggled to regain his senses.
Lockish, we've got trouble. I just hit Durga with an implode grenade, and all it did was knock the wind out of him.
Durga lifted his head, golden eyes filled with fury and disdain for the human who simply would not die.
Keep fighting, Mammal! The longer you survive, the more time you give your friends to make peace with their gods!
What makes you think you'll survive killing me?
Durga rose to rest on the coiled trunk of his serpentine lower half. He hadn't recovered fully yet, but scales began to form over the flesh that had been scoured by the implosion grenade.
You amuse me, Kane! I'll name my first extermination camp after you!
Kane whirled and continued racing through the tunnels. He checked the load on his Sin Eater. He had 1.5 magazines left, having burned off the rest. For all the good that the machine pistol did, Kane might as well have been throwing rice at a charging rhinoceros.
Kane! You need to get out of there and up into the main mall of the city!
Anna, who gave you our party line?
Fargo. He's acting pretty strange. Says he has a nanite construct in his brain.
Really? Tell him to hold still. I'll remove it for him.
Damnation! There's a bomb under the statue of Garuda, Kane. It was designed to inflict massive losses among the Naga population as a distraction for the consortium's attack. However, the explosives plus the natural gas should be enough to kill Durga.
Kane charged on, keeping one turn of a corner ahead of Durga at all times. Fargo had a good idea. The explosion would be a more intense variant on the implode grenade. It could work. Kane tried to subvert his distaste for the original intent of the killer bomb, however. The archaeologist had designed the weapon as a mechanism for mass murder. Only circumstance had transformed it into a possible salvation from the rule of an inhuman snake god.
Once I'm done, Fargo, you and I are going to have words.
Whatever. Get the hell up here now.
Kane raced, weaving his way back toward the ladder that had brought them down into this crimson-tinted hell. He hurled his last grenade down a tube to buy himself some time against the pursuing monstrosity. The snake monster stopped, and Kane climbed as fast as he could. Grant hauled Kane out of the mouth of the pit. He then slammed the hatch down, engaging the locks.
Is that a good idea?
Fargo, you suddenly got some magic brains. Would the security kill everything in the city?
It's a conventional explosive that would seal the pit.
Then let Durga break this door down.
If that's powerful enough to seal the catacombs, it could stop him cold.
And cut off whatever secrets Durga hadn't smashed down there.
It's time to run!
The Outlanders raced out of the chamber of the Cobra Baths.
He sounds mad. Let's hope that he doesn't get stronger the madder he gets.
The floor heaved, flexed, and cracked, large fissures cutting into the ground. Kane tumbled into one particularly deep crack, his shoulder gouged by jagged stone. The shadow suit protected his skin from being torn open, but the pain of the jab still stunned him. He crawled out of the furrow in the floor, then looked at Grant, Domi, and Bridget.
We're fine. Though that earthquake didn't do my ribs any good.
Well, nothing could have survived that.
Kane! I'm going to tear you in two and suck out your organs!
Grant, get to cover. You too, Domi.
I'm broke, not leg!
And if Bridget and I get roasted, you and Grant are our backup plan. Go!
Grant and Domi limped off down a side tunnel, looking back as they reluctantly abandoned their allies.
You've seen how fast he is.
But we still have to bait him toward Fargo's bomb.
Which we most likely won't survive if we're bait.
I'll draw him right to the statue.
Bridget was about to argue when Durga's hand wrapped around the wrecked archway leading into what used to be the Cobra Baths. The mighty serpent looked as if he were trying to drag himself out of a landslide. Furious golden eyes burned with hatred toward the humans in the hall.
Kane! Baptiste! I was hoping to have you two for dinner.
Another shrug tugged the serpentine monster farther into the hall. That was the Outlander's cue to run for their lives. Durga's flames lashed at their heels as they raced toward the main central mall of the Naga City. Durga surged one last time, freeing the end of his tail from beneath the tons of rubble. Ugly gashes had been torn in his nanite-transformed flesh, but they were slowly sealing again. He lowered his head, screwing deep down for reserves of strength. The interface came up in his mind.
Your body is nearly at the limits of what strain it can take. You need to allow a rest.
No! Not now!
With a sweep of his arm, he widened the shattered entrance of the Cobra Baths. His forearm ached where he had pulverized concrete. He glared down at the limb, some part of his mind informing him that the mechanisms coursing through his body had altered his form, but their efforts at repairing the horrendous damage inflicted by bullets, bombs, and grenades had drained them. It didn't matter. Even covered in scars, Durga still possessed more than enough strength to rip apart Kane and Baptiste. The other two had disappeared, but considering the hammering he had given them, they were most likely in hiding, licking their wounds. He slithered along, vowing that he would rest before hunting down the injured humans.
How's that for a compromise?
Altered cellular structure integrity failing. Altered stone and metal additions to natural form are experiencing rejection. Recommend conversion to normal mass and form.
No!
As Durga turned the corner, he spotted the central hall. Kane stood alone at the base of Garuda's statue. Durga sagged against the archway connecting the two corridors, then sent the command to the molecule-sized machines to expunge the 600 pounds of mass he'd absorbed into his new gigantic form. Stone and scrap metal tumbled onto the floor around him. The human braced himself, and Durga smirked.
I don't need a damned super body to kill you.
The nanomachines were working too hard to heal him.
What's the matter, Prince? Took too much of a beating?
Durga shook his head, the wound closing even as Kane watched.
Enki's gifts have made me a protean god. Cut me, shoot me, it doesn't matter. I don't bleed.
But if we rock you with a grenade, you feel it.
Durga squinted, his eyes focusing on the human and his surroundings. Kane aimed again at the enhanced being's forehead. The Cerberus warrior had been informed by Fargo that the nanomachines had offered a range of visual perception that could easily have located the bomb hidden beneath the statue.
You cleave to my father's form! Why? You thought that a big snake man made of stone might provide you with a little protection from another one like him?
Kane lunged backward between the legs of the statue. The prince strode more quickly now, the microscopic robots now powerful enough to restore his health since they didn't have to deal with the extra bulk he'd absorbed. In 7 strides, Durga had enough speed to leap across the main hall, striking the statue of Garuda in the chest with both feet. The flaming spear was held in place by the pipe system that fed its constantly burning natural gas lamps. Durga stood on the broken effigy of his father.
I shot this dumb bastard as he looked on me with approval.
Durga kicked the jaw off the statue, then turned toward the human. Kane got to his feet, pulling his combat knife.
Oh, blades versus fangs. Of course, that little bodkin isn't going to be any more effective than your gun, is it?
I never was one for going quietly.
I just hate stubborn people.
And I just hate megalomaniacs. Come on, I'm not getting any younger.
One last free shot. I want to see what you think can stop me.
Durga spread his arms wide, leaving himself open to Kane.
Go on! Stick a knife into an indestructible immortal!
Kane leaped, slamming into Durga and driving him back into the burning spear as it wobbled on the pipe that fed it. The Cerberus warrior plunged the blade into Durga's forehead.
Warning. Central nervous system compromise. Emergency recovery protocols activating.
Durga hurled Kane away with such strength that the human landed a dozen yards away. The knife was still stuck in Durga's head, and the sin-eater had been dropped when he pulled the knife. The Naga prince reached up, limbs impelled by nanomachines to wrench the blade out so that they could begin repairs on the pinioned brain.
Nice effort. But the nanites are keeping my brain running, despite what bit you separated with this. It will take a minute, but then I'll enjoy pulling your arms and legs off.
Take a look at where you're standing, on radar if you can.
Durga blinked, then looked down.
Interface, you heard the monkey.
Durga focused on a square block of some form of substance. Glancing up, he saw Hana's unmistakable profile on his radar vision, standing at least 100 yards away. She had something in her hand, emitting a signal pulse.
My beautiful bride!
Call this a divorce, Durga!
The object in her hand flared so bright that it blotted out the godling's enhanced vision. Kane had been hauled behind cover by Bridget, and he rode out the blast in her arms. The two people eventually lurched from behind the heavy barrier that had protected them.
To Merciless?
Kane looked at the blast crater created by Fargo's device. The vaporizing fireball had a radius of 30 feet. Even so, the overpressure of the shockwave had torn up marble columns and flagstones for another 80 feet. Had the hall not been evacuated for the duration of the emergency, people within 150 feet would have been killed. Kane's mad dash had taken him out of the kill zone.
Sometimes a little overkill doesn't hurt, Hana.
And a little compassion will make things a bit better for everyone involved.
So, what now?
It would be wonderful if the Naga could...
No.
But all we did...
No. Not right now. Our people have suffered enormously. The hangar, in case you didn't notice, is more wreckage than working aircraft.
You don't have enough to spare.
Plus the deaths caused by the insurgents and the loss of Durga's personal guard. We have half a government left. Maybe in a few years.
Years. But we'll try to keep the planet together for you until then.
If you don't mind, I'd prefer you return to Cerberus tonight. We have one helicopter capable of taking you to the temple.
I wish we could have saved the interface to reprogram the Cobra Baths.
Manticore is a strong man. And he told me, you don't need feet to be a husband.
One more thing. Where did Fargo go?
I let him go. Repayment for the weapon that destroyed Durga.
I'm too tired to kick his ass anyway. Good luck rebuilding, even if your people decide to never talk to us again.
And maybe someday, we'll be able to forget the likes of Fargo and the consortium. Just concentrate on good people like you.
Kane rested his arm around Bridget's shoulder. The two explorers turned and began their long trek to the hangar. The journey around the planet wouldn't take long, thanks to the power of the interphaser, but the losses of the past few days would make it feel long. The destroyed 20th century technology and the burial of Enki's secrets beneath thousands of tons of collapsed stone paled in comparison to the death of a kind matron and dozens of her loyal subjects. Their consolation, though, would come in the thousands who had been saved. That, and the fact that they weren't leaving a nest of angry vipers. When the Naga would next appear to humanity, the Cerberus envoys would be there, ready to offer friendship. Cain rested his head against Brigid's.
Let's go home, Baptiste.
Outlander's Serpent's Tooth is a Graphic Audio production. Outlanders and all characters are trademarks owned by Harlequin Enterprises Limited, used by others under license. Copyright 2009 Worldwide Library, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2009 The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Performed by Terrence Aselford, Nanette Savard, Thomas Penny, Richard Rowan, David Coyne, Dolores King-Williams, Colleen Delaney, Eric Messner, Nathan Bennett, James Konacek, Elizabeth Demery, Andy Clements, Ken Jackson, Tim Carlin, Yasmin Tuazon, Tony Nam, Tom Simpson, and Mort Shelby. Additional red shirts by The Dead Giveaways. Directed by Terrence Aselford. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. Dialogue editing by Temeskin Wubna. Graphic audio sound design by Temeskin Wubna and Chris Rowan. Adapted for graphic audio by Joshua Cristiano. The Outlanders theme was composed by Norman Vanderslice. If you enjoyed Outlanders, be sure to look for James Axler's Deathlands, available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Keep listening for previews of other thrilling titles in Graphic Audio.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
This just in. A large fire is burning on the grounds of Arkham Asylum.
Allow me to introduce myself. I am called Enfa.
Reports are spreading through the city that various inmates have been spotted in nearby neighborhoods.
Honey, I'm home!
I came to make sure you answer for those firefighters.
Justice, Batman, is not the same thing to all people.
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics Batman. Inferno.
Oh my, this will be good.
Batman just ran over that girl!
Three Gotham City police officers are confirmed dead.
A full-scale manhunt is underway to find Batman and bring him in.
Lay him down, slow, and step away! Do it, Batman!
I'm not going to freeze while Gotham burns.
Arch-arsonist Enfer is apparently making good on his threat to spread havoc across Gotham City.
My city, my love. Who could live anywhere else?
Batman and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. Copyright 2009, DC Comics.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include five books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.